for the blood that your son shed on that cross for each and every one of us here and outside these walls as well. Everyone across the world, around the world, we thank you that your name is above all names. And we continually praise and thank you with your will being done in everything that we say and everything that we do in each and every day of our lives. No matter what's being accomplished, what's being done, what we work with. And I thank you again for each member here tonight. I pray you guide and direct in our lives, each and as where we leave tonight as well. And God direct, give wisdom and direction. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Tonight, I'd like to work with a book as now we know it for Ecclesiastics as far as wisdom goes. We're going to be working with Ecclesiastes chapter 7, so if you'd like to turn there, go ahead. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of what we're going to be looking at and dealing with here before we get into 7. But Ecclesiastes, like the book of Job, it presents one of the greatest challenges to understanding in the Bible. Ancient Hebrews used to debate its meaning and whether or not it should be even included in the canon of Scripture. And we'll see a little bit later on why that is. But fortunately for us, by divine providence, Ecclesiastes did make it into the Bible with a unique message for our leaders. The central theme of the book focuses on the meaning of life, motives for our behavior, and where God fits into our personal mission, paramount issues for every Christian. Christians cannot find genuine fulfillment outside of linking their lives to God's purposes for the world. As the teacher explores various avenues for satisfaction, power, possessions, prestige, pleasure, he finds them hollow. God moves him along the path of discovery until he finds no real meaning to life under the heavens, but only in the true relationship to God and his eternal purposes. God provides all meaning and fulfillment in this life that we live. The author could not find anything of value apart from a life lived in obedience to God's calling. Now, there was some debate on who exactly wrote Ecclesiastes, I guess you'd say, but most agree that it was Solomon in his older years. Because of the writings, whether it be the style of writings, things that they said that are run along the lines like Proverbs, what he was talking about. But the lessons that you got to look at here are no real meaning exists apart from linking our lives to God's purpose. Two would be humanism and materialism provide incomplete counsel for decision making. Number three, possessions, people, pleasure, prestige, and power make great servants, but poor masters. Number four, timing is key. When to lead is as important as what to do and where to go. Number five, people are motivated by a variety of incentives. Six, divine wisdom provides direction, protection, correction, and resolution. And number seven, Christians must invest themselves generously, knowing the payoff comes later. Now, we're going to take Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse by verse here. But before I get started here, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we look at whenever you read through as far as wisdom goes. When people look at life, they either look at the cup, it's like they look at it as cup half empty or it's half full. I mean, you have optimism on one side and pessimism on the other side. Optimism is the biggest winner that creates hope in each and every one of us. But because of the world and because of the things that happen to us, personal experiences, whether it be whatever the case may be, that beat us down, trials, tribulations, we have a tendency to lean toward the pessimistic side, and I'm guilty of that more so than I guess mostly anybody else. I have a tendency to look for the worst in the situation before I'm looking for the tripwire. I'm looking for something that's going to get me. But it's the same thing as looking at ourselves in a mirror. I always wondered why them guys in the gym and everything else, they couldn't pass a mirror with, without stopping and looking at it. But I never had that issue. I never knew, understood why. I never wanted to look in a mirror because of decisions poor decisions I had made in the past and where things had led. I didn't look at myself even to shave for years in a mirror because I didn't want to see who was staring back at me. I didn't want to look at that person staring back at me, which is most likely what people call ourselves or as we're our own worst enemy. But the thing is, you look at as Christians, we have a tendency to look through windows. We like to look through windows because we can see everybody else's faults and situations. But the thing is, if you look just right a certain time of day, when the sun hits that window at just the right angle, what's staring back at you? Your own reflection. It's a translucent reflection, but you could still see it, your reflection. It's the same thing as a mirror. The thing is, there's an easier tendency to look through that translucent reflection of ourselves to see other people wandering around, bumping into walls, bumping their heads, and they're running ahead first in the situations and pointing out faults. I mean, like I said, I'm as guilty as the next person. There's no pointing fingers here because, like I said, you look in a mirror. There's only one person. You're facing that person. They're all pointing back at you. But it's optimism. It comes down to optimism and pessimism, how you look at life and how you handle things, how you deal with things, your choice when it comes down to choice and your decision and how you handle things. We all have decisions to make. We all have been given the privilege of free will. But we also put up with, like I said, the decisions we make. We also put up with the choices, the effects of those decisions, whatever they may be, whether good or bad. And a lot of us, I mean, sometimes considering the fact that we are born into sin, most of the time they are bad. And we keep bumping our own heads off the wall and keep, it's like a rat, and they say the rat in the maze, they keep wrapping themselves off the wall until they find the next corner, until they find the next quarter, until they finally find their way out of the maze. But tonight, we're going to look, like I said, the way it's written, I'm pretty sure, like I said, I agree with a lot of the other scholars that we're looking at Solomon talking here in his older age because of the things he said. But we're going to start digging into chapter 7. We're going to take it a verse at a time. We're going to start with verse 1. A good name is better than precious ointments, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. He starts right out the gate with, we have, like I said, you have a choice to make a decision of optimism or pessimism. A good name is better than precious ointment. Precious ointment, I mean, it's whether it be cologne, whether it be perfume. It's been translated perfume in other translations, but ointment, it has a tendency, even good ointment has a tendency to fade over time. A good name isn't going to fade over time. Honor, commitment, courage, integrity, respect, things like that don't fade over time. That's what he's talking about here. And it's the day of one's death than the day of one's birth. The day of one's death, I mean, people like that, the world may look at that as harsh. The day of one's death, something ends, but we understand that something else, something wonderful begins. That's the end. The day of our death is we cross that threshold, we cross that finish line, that race, and we cross into the wonderful glory that God has prepared for each and every one of us. We understand that. But a lot of folks, like I said, if you're a pessimist, you might look at the day of your death as a problem, a big issue that you don't want to face or you don't want to come face to face with. And justifiably understood, because they don't know where they're going. The unsaved do not know where they're going. But we're going to go on here and move on into. It says, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. It's better to go to the house of mourning than go to the house of feasting. It still sounds like a grave situation, no matter how you put it. The house of mourning doesn't sound too wonderful of a place to be at, to be in, to put yourself in, than to go to the house of feasting. The house of mourning, we look at, as far as optimism goes, when you're in mourning, when someone's in mourning, there is no other way to go but up, because they've reached rock bottom. Usually when you're someone's in mourning, they've reached rock bottom, they've hit rock bottom, and there is no other way to go but up, which is a positive, which is the optimistic view. And that's where it's then to go to the house of feasting. The house of feasting, as you'll see later on in these verses in this chapter, it leads to the downfall, as Solomon's seen it many times, that he put it up with. He went through the issue with the concubines, the wives that allowed all the religions that came, other religions that came in. That was a downfall. That was one of his major downfalls that we've been talking about. Kevin's been talking about, and it's been brought out. Even Eric talked about David this morning. Now, verse number 3, it says, "Sorrow is better than laughter." How can that be? Sorrow is better than laughter. Who said sorrow? Who said sorrow is better than laughter? Laughter, they said, is supposed to be the medicine for the soul. It's supposed to make the soul feel better. But you have to look at what type of laughter, what type of pleasure, what type of feasting this chapter, what they're talking about, how they get that, where that laughter comes from. I mean, that laughter in genuine laughter because of things that are happening, that are going, your life's going well, choices are being made, you're good choices, you got great outcomes, you're going to be happy. I mean, you're going to be, that's one type of happiness. But we're talking about the pleasure and the happiness, just like we talked about the feasting, the house of feasting before. The song was written in the house, the house of the rising sun. I mean, we know that, we all know where that leads. And that's what the object that he's trying to get across, as far as the house of feasting. For sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. 4, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Once again, we're talking about the heart of the wise in the house of mourning, just like we had talked about just a second ago. Mourning, when we talk about someone is mourning, like I said, they usually reach rock bottom and there's no way to go but up. And that's definitely a good thing, because as they climb that ladder, they can help others along the way through our situations, whether we come up alongside our brothers and sisters, our Christian brothers and sisters along the way, and help them as well through what we're going through, whatever the case may be that we're going through, we experience in our lives, just like with the guys I was helping out up at Sheffield. We're all along the same lines. I understand where they're coming from. And there was definitely new things to learn from them as well. There's definitely new things to learn each and every day of our lives. But we've experienced growth with them guys and other people as well. And they continue to grow to this day, which is a wonderful thing. But verse 5, it says, "Better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools." Now, when we listen to songs, we expect to be entertained. When we listen to music, we'll be like our music, whatever the case may be, whatever the gospel, southern gospel. And there were a lot of songs that were written, and a lot of songs that draw us in out there, but they're the songs of fools. The songs that, like the Pied Piper, they call it Pan, the Pied Piper, he played the flute, the pan, the flutes, they had followed them because of the music. It was a drawing, it drew them in a sense, but it was basically an image of Satan himself, of the Pied Piper. I mean, playing the Pied Piper with the music that we hear that he plays. That's tempting to each and every one of our ears, but it says it's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. The rebuke of the wise, I mean, it may be a hard pill to swallow when it comes. Constructive criticism is a hard pill to swallow no matter what, I think. Depending on the situation, the circumstances you're going through at the time, a lot of times you don't want to hear it. And you want to keep going, keep moving along. But the rebuke of the wise is necessary, like I said, it's a necessary pill to swallow that we need to hear instead of the song of fools. In verse 6, it says, "For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity." Anybody ever throw a pine cone in a fire, in a bonfire? Pine cones? bunch of pine cones and bonfire, well, they have a tendency to go do a little bit more than crackling, and like thorn bushes do, but they have a tendency to pop and crackle and everything else. But it's annoying sometimes when it happens, when they finally set off, when they finally go off. But it's just like you said, for the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and the gifts destroyeth the heart. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. I'm going to stop right there for a second, because that's a big issue, a prayer request that I would have for myself. Down through the years, I've let it take, the pessimism had take hold, and I've fed it to the point where I used it as a weapon, I guess you'd say, for a protection, for a defense of my own life. But in feeding that pessimism as long as I had, it creates an angry spirit that doesn't need to be, that doesn't need to exist. And I've seen in other people as well, like some of the guys, I mean, there are a lot of individuals that have let an angry spirit take over and fed it all these years. And it doesn't get you anywhere. I still have an issue. I have some issues myself. I've gotten past a lot of the issues. But when it comes down to things like disrespect to people I care about, I don't care what people do to me. But when something happens to people I care about, whether it be disrespect or anything else, it has a tendency to knot up in my throat, and it wants to come out like it had before in years ago. But once again, it's another pill to swallow, a hard pill to swallow, just like we had just talked about. And it kind of hurts going back down and try to force it back down. But the more you practice it, the more you practice something, the better it gets. Like whether it be practice singing, whether it be practice instruments, playing a piano, guitar, whatever the case may be, practicing playing ball, baseball, football, you have to practice to be good at, to get good at something, to accomplish, to actually be good at something and stay good at something. You have to continually practice each and every day of our lives. Christianity is a constant prayer. I mean, we're working on this. It's a constant work of, we're working on this each and every day of our lives. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes that pill is going to be hard to swallow, just like we had talked about. But this is really an issue, a prayer request that I would ask for myself. There's a lot of people that are already praying for me, and for some other folks I know that are dealing with the same issues. But anger cultivates a garden of regret. That's another famous saying. There's many different sayings where it talks about anger. But not only but anger resteth in the bosom of fools, but you become a fool when you blow up or when you let anger take hold of your life and motivate you, be the motivation behind the functioning process day by day that gets you through each day like it used to be. And you can't let it become a habit. You know, it's an addiction. It's in a form of addiction. Because you let it become a form of addiction. I did. I had let it become a form of anger, become a form of addiction. I justified it, just the same as anybody else would. You can justify almost anything, and if you try hard enough, and I did, and it didn't work. It did nothing but hurt my health and people around me. That were around me. It's like the pond, like I said, it's like throwing a stone in the pond, the ripple effect. You may not know, you may have affected people that you've never even seen in the vicinity, that's in the close vicinity, that heard the conversation, or heard whatever you had to say, or heard, seen whatever you did, whatever the case may be, and it hurts our testimonies as Christians. And That's not what I want for the guys. That's not what I want for those guys we have up there. It's not what I want for anybody that we talk to as far as Christian, the unsaved, and try to minister to them. Like I said, actions speak louder than words. And sorry to say, a lot of times actions don't speak too well. But that's what he's talking about, is be not hasty in the spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Another translation would say, why were the old days better than these? You hear a lot of people say that. I've said it. I mean, as old as I am, I've still said it. I said, why are the old days better than the days we got going on right now? That's a good question. But they try to tell you, they tell you not to focus on it. It says, for it is not wise to ask such questions. The past is in the past, obviously, and it's not coming back. I say history repeats itself like a wheel, like a hamster wheel, but I don't know. I mean, we're talking about each and every one of our personal lives. The history, when we talk about history repeating itself, they're usually talking about whether it be wars, world wars, revolutions, anything along those lines, major movements in history. But it's in verse 11, it says, wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider God also has set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. We'll stop there. He said, in a sense, he said, when times are good, and be happy, but when times are bad, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future. And it's hard for us to look at that situation. Like I said, the optimism and pessimism comes right back into play. God made one. He made one just the same as he did the other. He gives us the good times the same as he does that. He allows the bad times to happen to us, whether it be whatever the case may be for, whether it be for an example to someone else, to help someone else in their journey towards salvation. We got a guy that's that beat cancer 4-5 times sterling, and both his sons, I know Tony and his other son, is one's on the run, the other, they're both unsaved. I don't know if this is he keeps pulling them through for the sons, the two sons, and I mean, they were close to salvation at one time, but then it just bounced like a ping pong ball and took off the other way. So I don't know what this situation may be. He may be going through this. It may be a test for him to going through some other test for himself in specifics. I don't know, but we're continually praying for Tony and his brother, that they would come around if this may be, and I pray it doesn't take the death of Sterling or their father to bring them both around. But if that's what the case is, then just like we just talked here, he said he makes the one, when times are good, be happy, but when times are bad, consider this, God has made the one as well as the other. Keep in mind, he's made both, and he's taken us through both. And sometimes it doesn't get any easier to talk about it. Sometimes it's still a difficult procedure, difficult tribulation, trial we have to go through, whatever the case may be. But you also remember, he said that he'll be there one way or the other. He won't leave us nor forsake us, and he'll never give us something we can't handle. He'd never give it; we wouldn't be able to bear. And verse 15, it says, all things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. That brings up, that raises the issue what we've talked about before. Why do bad people get ahead? Why do we keep falling backwards? Why do we keep getting hammered every time we turn a corner? But the unsaved or the wicked people have a tendency to get it. They seem like they're getting ahead. Well, they're getting ahead to a certain point, to a certain extent. They may get ahead to a certain extent down here, but that's the best that they have is down here. We look to an eternal home that once we finish, we cross that finish line in death, that they can't take from us. And that has nothing to that. That means nothing as far as the wicked. The wicked can get ahead. They can get ahead all they want to. I mean, it's happened since the beginning of time, since Adam and Eve. You've seen there's countless examples of evil people getting ahead. And I don't want to bring politics into it, but I mean, that's a perfect example. I mean, it's a plain example, plain as day, plain as the nose on their faces, where evil people do get ahead. How it happens, why it happens, I mean, we don't know. I don't know why. There's a reason. God has a reason. He will accomplish his will with all people, with the saved as well as the unsaved. I've seen that happen too as well. And we can't, like I said, when we're looking in that mirror, we're looking through that glass, you got to remember to see your own reflection. There's your reflection. Remember your reflection. It's pointing back at you. I mean, you can see it at certain times of the day. But to focus on our travels and to focus on our journey and to take our focus off of the evil people, I mean, the evil of the wicked people, the folks of the world, because it's like listening to the news or social media or anything else today. I mean, if you weren't depressed before you listened to the news or watched anything on social media, you will be after you do, after that, the case may be, whether it be Facebook, whether it be the news on TV, Fox News, NBC, ABC, whatever. It's just we see people getting ahead daily, constantly in this day and age, and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. It keeps getting faster and faster and faster. But in 16 says, "Be not righteous over much, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? It is good, and and thou shouldst take hold of this, yea also from the withdraw not thine hand, for he that feareth God shall come forth of them all." Verse 19, it says, "Wisdom strengthened the wise more than 10 mighty men which were in the city. For there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not." We're going to stop right there for a second. It says, "For there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not." There was only one. And we know who that was. There was only one man that walked this earth that was perfect and sinneth not. It says in verse 21, it said, "Also take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee." Here's the second half of that. "For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others." Yes, it says, "Is there indeed no one on this earth who is righteous, no one who does what is right and never sins? Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you. For you knoweth in your heart that many times you have yourself cursed others." When we're talking about looking in a mirror, looking through a window, we have a tendency to, whether it be judging others, cursing others. God said, "If you curse me, I will curse you." Plain and simple, to stay away from speaking is to stay away from vocabulary and talk like that. But it says also, "Take no heed unto all the words that are spoken," because if you listen closely, it says, "Thou hear thy servant curse thee." And you, when you hear a servant curse you, obviously you're up in arms, your back is against the wall now, and you take offense. But in the very next verse it says, for oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. It's coming right back around, the judgment's coming right back around. It's like I said, you're pointing a finger at yourself, whether it be through a window, at someone else, or in a mirror. It's coming right back around to nail you, to slap you right in the mouth, to hit you with the same judgment that you just judged this person. As far as you heard the curse of the servants, now, if you stop and think, like I have to stop and think, you have to slow down the thought process and stop and think, why is this happening? Why is this, why are we going through this now? Why is this person going through what they're going through? And you have to actually stop and think of the whole process, the thought process that takes you through it, step by step by step. You can follow the trail of breadcrumbs till you get to the reason behind it. And usually, like I said, for oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. You're judged by exactly the same judgment you're judging others with. In 23, it says, all this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. And obviously, we don't know if it was that definitely Solomon wrote this, but most scholars agree that it was. And you can see this here. It says, also this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. He was the wisest person on the face of the earth to this day. But yet, the many things he went through, he said, all is vanity. I mean, that's where he come to the conclusion, all is vanity. He took hundred concubines, brought all their religions, their faiths, their beliefs, into the kingdom, and wrecked Israel once again. And he's admitting it, like I said, in his older age, he's actually coming out admitting it, which is far off and exceedingly deep. Who can find it out? I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things, and to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart it snares and nets, and at her hands whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. Once again, another proof text that we think this is Solomon talking, obviously, from experience. just like we had talked about before, he said, I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. And you can see right down from Solomon to David, as you name, you run down the names of history, they've experienced the same thing. Behold, this I have found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account, which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among a thousand have I found, but a woman among all those have I not found. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. And that's the final nail in the coffin here. You say that this only have I found, God created mankind upright, but they have gone in search of many schemes or inventions. If man was, allowed his own, we only use what one? I think it was 1/10 of the brain itself. That's what they figured out. Even Einstein, supposedly the smartest man on the face of the earth. If we used even half of it, a third, a quarter, a half of our brains, could you imagine what talks about the mankind has gone? God created mankind upright in his own image, but they have gone in search of many schemes or many inventions. Where many of those inventions and many of those schemes led them down through the years, down through the centuries. I mean, since the beginning of time, obviously, really. All these schemes, all these inventions. It doesn't matter what they've created. They've tried to clone this. They've tried to clone sheep. They've tried to do this. They've tried to play God. They've tried to do all these schemes and all these inventions that they've been coming up with. It all means something. Just like Solomon said, it all is vanity. He understood it to the core. He understood that message to the core of his heart. And I think it was a little late in life after everything fell down, after everything came down on his head. It's the same thing as, I mean, you accept your consequences for the decisions we've made, just like I did, or the guys that I told that we had up at the house. You have to accept the consequences because of the decisions we make. It's just like I said, for years I did not look at myself in a mirror even to shave my own face, because I knew what was looking back at me. And it wasn't a pretty sight, and it wasn't. I didn't want to see that, because, like I said, we're our own worst enemy. We create our own problems. We're our own worst enemies with the decisions we make, and that free will we have a tendency to throw around. But like I said, mankind has gone in search of many schemes, many inventions. They're going to continue to go. They're going to continue to try to get bigger. More in depth with these schemes, these inventions that they have. AI is coming, artificial intelligence is coming around the bend right now. You're starting to hear more and more of that. And it just the more things that they look for, the more things, the schemes that they search for and inventions they search for, the more it seems to go downhill. I mean, you see the bottom dropped out, and they continuously roll downhill all the faster. You ever see a bear trying to roll downhill? It ain't going to run. It's going to roll. That's the way the world's going right now, and it just keeps getting faster. The further along it goes. But that was the lesson that I had tonight. Like I said, it was it's a sort of a self-examination of my when I look in the mirror, I know what's looking back. I know the person looking back at me. And I know the decisions I've made in the past, and the choices we have to make for the future to change our past, no matter what they may be, or what we went through, whatever, because everybody's different, just like fingerprints. There's no two situation alike, no two lifestyle alike, and we all have choices to make, good or bad. I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, it happens each and every day. And not just to us, but everybody outside these doors, outside these walls, across the country, across the world. They all have decisions to make, but they also have the choice to accept the responsibility of what happens behind them choices that are made. And just like Solomon was talking about, fool, the wise man and a fool, all the way through Ecclesiastes and Proverbs and wherever you may look. But that's the lesson I had this evening. Anybody, any comments, questions, or all the above? Yeah. Okay. So join me in prayer if you would. Then, if we close, we'll close here in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, as we come before you this evening, we thank you once again for each and every.